On the other hand, there are some errors in the landlord side that allow them to not pay relocation when perhaps they were intended to. One error that, or one such loophole that has been brought to my attention multiple times is putting multiple properties into separate LLCs. And I do want to acknowledge there's some disagreement about whether or not that is actually a loophole or not, but I have seen landlord industry groups and property management companies publicly on their websites advertise that as a way to not have to pay relocation. And the one landlord exemption already is a huge burden to tenants, a huge equity and access issue, because it requires that tenants know about Portland maps, know how to use Portland maps, and the county databases and the Secretary of State website in order to actually figure out who their landlord is and how many properties they have financial interest in. It's a puzzle for me as a very, you know, technologically literate person, well aware of these databases, to really track down whether or not their landlords actually have one unit or not. And to further complicate that by then saying that the landlord is exempt if they're using a property management company, and then requiring the tenant to go, you know, really make sure that their landlord really only owns one unit. It just already for tenants who shouldn't be exempt from this ordinance at all just because they rent from a small landlord, it doesn't make moving any less expensive for them. It does introduce additional burdens. So I would say that we shouldn't close that loophole on the one side without addressing loopholes on the other side. And I would personally like to see that referred back to the committee until we can kind of look at ways that that one landlord exemption is kind of impacting both sides and come up with a strong fix for both parties.
Thank you for that. That's from me. I want to ask Denis and Lisa, perhaps, isn't it difficult to set up an LLC, a limited liability company? I mean, I can't imagine if you only had one unit, why would you want to create an LLC?
And Commissioner, I'd be happy to have a conversation with you about that. I mean, it depends what you mean by difficult. I mean, it is fairly cheap to set up an LLC, and it is fairly quick. I mean, there are some hoops that one has to go through, but they're not overly onerous.
And what would be the advantage to the landlord of doing that?
And again, you know, I'd be happy to research that issue. I mean, I could see essentially if an individual set up several LLCs to manage properties, then each LLC is the landlord.
No, that's, I'm not talking about the person who really does only have one property,
that's
one unit.
So
I think we're agreeing. Certainly we should not accept people who've got multiple just because they call it something else.
But they are technically right now exempt.
Not under the amendments I introduced. So I thought the purpose of this committee was to make sure that we were clear on that. Lisa Grant's got something to say.
Can you have to do it on the record?
And introduce yourself.
Because otherwise the captioners can't hear and you're not on the record.
Sorry, for the record, Lisa Graham. So the reason somebody would do that would be to limit their liability for that particular property to just that LLC. It's actually fairly common to set up, you know, your properties in that way. So,
well, if you have a multifamily property, mm-hmm. it's not common to set up 200 LLCs for 200 units in the building.
No. No, I'm talking about like specific addresses, right? You would have 7 Cedar Street LLC, 15 another street LLC.
So I guess the question, because I appreciate, Margo, you flagging this, and I think I understand the point you're making about a potential loophole. Is it your view that this amendment, because it brings in property managers, in effect has the perverse effect of encouraging someone to exercise this loophole?
No, I'm saying that where we recognize that the intent of the ordinance is to exempt owners of one unit, even if they use a property management company, and who are right now, by definition, not exempt if they use a property management company, and we want to fix that in order to honor the intention of the ordinance.
Right.
from a fairness standpoint, I think that we should, you know, that, like I said, that's kind of an error in the tenant's favor. Right now, if a tenant is renting from a property management company, you know, and that property management company manages more than one unit, by definition, they would be owed relocation. I believe it's probably the intention of the council to exempt exempt the owner of that unit from paying relocation if they only own that one unit, even if they're going through a property management company. Okay. I would say, so basically we're trying to tighten down that exemption to make sure that that owners who aren't meant to pay relo don't pay relo. Of course, the effect being that any, you know, that is even now just a bigger class of tenants who don't get it. But we're not addressing, on the flip side, of owners who are intended to pay relo not paying relo. And so just from a fairness perspective, rather than, you know, tighten it for the landlords, we should do that at the same time as tightening it to make sure that the tenants who are supposed to get it are getting it. Like, basically, don't exempt the property managers until we also fix the language around the LLCs and potentially other, you know, we had another situation where, I think it was in the flagged testimony, or the one of the flagged issues, we have an owner who has two or three units, I think, and they became, two of them became naturally vacant. The tenants just put in their own notice. So now they're only renting out one unit, and they gave a no-cause eviction. And they didn't have to pay relocation, because even though they own three units, the ordinance doesn't say own. It says rents out. And so they're only renting out the one unit. So they gave a no-cause eviction. And actually were rather smug in the fact that they could. And so, you know, part of my wanting to make sure that we kind of fix it equitably on both sides is important to me.
Thank you.
Yes, that's very helpful.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm here.
We appreciate it.
For the record, I'm Jane Leo with the Portland Metropolitan Association of Realtors here in Portland. And in testimony, there are many things that I could respond to, but I specifically want to say that while we still don't support the underlying ordinance and have significant concern about the policy considerations that some were named, some were addressed, some are left for you all to make decisions on, I do appreciate the opportunity to attempt to bring some clarification to the ordinance. Some points I do want to make is I do appreciate, on behalf of the association, this council, the recommendation coming before you and support the amendment that recognizes the owner of a single property that happens to contract with a property management company. If you recall back to your February 2nd hearing, I believe the woman's name was Mrs. Fink. She testified she owns one unit in North Portland. If for whatever reason she should decide to use a property management company, she should still be allowed that one owner exemption. So I support the amendment that's before you.
Jane, can I ask you a question? I originally supported the one unit exemption because I was focused more on accessory dwelling units and the mm-hmm. fact that the council has gone to great lengths to create incentives for people to have ADUs and to have as much flexibility as possible. But the question has been posed, could you use legal artifice to game the system by having multiple properties, treat them all as separate LLCs, and therefore claim the exemption on each one, even though you're actually technically a landlord owning multiple units. What's your view of that? And have you observed anyone that is part of your association either advising people to do that or taking that action?
The question has been raised by members of the association, many of whom own rental property as part of their retirement plan. The question has been raised, and I'll be very honest with you, Commissioner Fish. I have heard legal opinion on both sides as to whether or not, even if you, the question has really come down to, even if you can create separate LLCs, would the court recognize that as separate legal entities, therefore falling under the one owner exemption? Or would the court say, no, the lines all trace themselves back to one person? And I've heard our legal argument on both sides of that.
It sounds to me, given that you know, God put lawyers on the earth to test the limits of these things, right? And someone is going to try to come up with a creative theory. Couldn't we, I say that as a recovering lawyer.
divine by divine right.
Harder, not so divine. But I would say, couldn't we actually address this through a through a code change so that to discourage people from thinking that they could just spawn a bunch of LLCs in order to create the fiction that they are just owners of one unit? I mean, I think we could. My guess is that our legal team, which I'll put up against any other legal team, I think we have the best law firm in the city. I'm thinking we could come up with some language which might discourage some of our friends to put multiple properties into separate LLCs by just deeming that to be by declaring that under those circumstances you're not eligible for this exemption. So go ahead and spend the legal fees, but we're not going to treat that. And if you do, we're going to ding you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Now that I hear you talking about that, though, it goes back to the U.S. Supreme Court Citizens United decision, you know, corporations being people and money being speech, etc. So I think it might be quite difficult to define. On the other hand, it might be possible to get to, yes, landlord maybe is the LLC, but who's the person?
And if I'll chime in as well. I mean, everything we're doing here is by code.
Yeah.
And there are innumerable iterations that we could go through, and we could spend years discussing the legal theory behind every iteration that unfolds under every layer of this onion. So just remember, as a council, we always have the ability to come back and right-size or change or refine in any way we want based on what we actually see happening in the community.
Mayor.
But in terms of going through the exercise of what might happen hypothetically, I can think of lots of different policy issues that aren't even being addressed yet that weren't even on that list. Yeah. But that's for another day.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mayor, and that's also why lawyers were smart enough to charge by the hour, so, contemplating we could spend years debating these things. But I do think the question, if someone's intent is to expand beyond the one unit exemption by creating essentially the legal fiction that their multiple properties are in separate LLCs, I'm quite confident we could come up at some point with a code fix that makes it clear in the definition section that is still treated as a that person is not eligible for the exemption. I'm quite confident our crack team could do that.
So enough till we've had public testimony, we get to discuss this again. I would like Lisa Graham to come up and give us a suggestion on that, because in the code it ought to be possible to say we're talking about human beings. Sorry, you got interrupted, James. Please continue.
I do ask that this council take into consideration that there is a tremendous amount of difference between a multi-family high-rise unit that is rentals and those individuals that do own single-family properties. There's a tremendous amount of difference in how they're managed and operated, and that be kept in consideration as you go forward in talking about this and making your decisions. We do support the amendment that's come before you, that the relocation fee is by unit and not by occupants. And to clarify a point that's come up regarding the 60 days, under federally guaranteed mortgages, which would include ones that you yourselves may have taken part of at one time in life and may have one right now, if your mortgage is a federally guaranteed mortgage that's come to you through FHA, the VA, USDA, or even some conventional loans, if that rental unit is put on the market, and right now I can attest that when I looked at the last numbers, we have, as of February 2nd to date of yesterday, 274 tenant-occupied single-family units were put on the market. We could debate all day long whether or not that's reaction to this council's actions or what's happening in Salem, or perhaps both. But we're not here to do that. But to clarify, if that unit's put up for sale and it's currently a rental and it becomes owner-occupied in a market that we have right now, which is which is in high demand market, and that unit is going to become an owner occupied on the federal mortgage. Occupancy is required within 60 days for that new home buyer. Often that first time home buyer, 60 days is required for them to take occupancy in order to be eligible for that mortgage. So to the question that was raised, I hope that that clarifies it a bit.
I don't. So I'm still not seeing why that's a problem then.
I'm sorry?
I'm still not seeing why the 60 days is a problem.
Well, it's come down to if you have the owner of the property gives notice, and it's a 90-day notice, but the house sells in 5 days.
Yes.
You now have your lending process, which is governed as a federal system under the Consumer Federation Protection Bureau, the CFPB. Clock starts ticking.
No, I got it. Thank you. And we don't have a proposal to fix that yet. That's one of the policy things we're going to put on the list for continuing the conversation.
Right, it's part of the continuing conversation. And my final point that I want to raise is on the 31 days, like most things in life, consensus is reached through compromise. And in a good compromise, everybody loses a little bit. And I believe that was, when we came to the 31 days, that was recognized that it was everyone came to the consensus vote, but recognizing that it may have not been ideal in their individual world, but as a group, it was a consensus vote for the 31 days.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate you both being here. Come on.
Hi. Lisa Graham again. Can I just answer whatever questions you have right now? I've got to go to another matter.
So what's your suggestion for defining person or human being in the code?
Well, without getting into kind of real-time drafting, I think we could figure out sort of majority interest in a property and craft some language in that way in order to avoid the LLC problem.
And does the language that we've got in this proposal conflict with that?
No, it doesn't conflict with it. I think we'd have to augment it to address that issue. Because we're using, what we do is we, in our code, we are referring to the defined term landlord that is in the state statute. And so the state statute encompasses all these categories that raised this issue that was the property management issue that was raised as a result of the amendment. Because remember that
right.
Exemption was added as an amendment, so that wasn't anticipated in the original draft. So the amended language is what caused the property management issue to get daylighted.
And from today, how long would it take you to figure out what that would look like?
It would depend on what we wanted, I suppose.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that the state law defines a landlord as a person, a corporation, a partnership. I mean, the usual legal definition. So it covers different statuses. I think the question that we're looking for some guidance on is regardless of how you define landlord for purposes of our exemption, mm-hmm. coming up with either an additional definition or exclusion that says that if you own multiple properties that are in different legal ownerships, that will be considered to be beyond the one unit
exactly.
Exemption.
Yes. I think it would be something to the extent that, you know, a landlord has a majority interest in more than one property.
Yeah, regardless of the legal status.
Exactly.
Because people are going to hold property in a trust. They're going to hold it mm-hmm. in a corporation. They're going to hold it in a partnership. That's not our concern. It's
right.
just that it's we don't want to encourage someone to use those forms in order to disguise the fact they own more than one property
yeah.
and thus claim the exemption on each of those individual properties.
Right, exactly.
And I wouldn't even have the majority interest, any interest in more than one property, I think.
That's why I was saying it would depend on what the policy direction is.
So
it's how you wanted to craft it.
Could you get that done within a week?
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Is that it?
Do we have other people testifying there other than the panel?
Well, let's find out. Susan, has anybody signed up for public testimony today?
We have two testifiers.
Very good. Why don't we hear from them?
Nancy Newell and Megan Dorton, please come up.
3 minutes each, if you could please state your name for the record. Thank you. Are both the green lights on the mics there?
Yeah.
Perfect, great.
Okay.
Thank
so
you.
My name is Nancy Newell. I've been a resident here for over 25 years, owned my own house. And I brought to the council's attention in the past major corporations that have impacts all over the world, and our council can draw attention to the dangers, and instead, our council's history is very poor in Portland. They brought in Enron when I brought out the point that they were criminals in India on a natural gas explosion, which was ignored. In this housing crisis, who are the players? How detailed a research? You, as representatives of the people, I don't care what the laws have been made or all the confusion, why am I able to investigate and get the accurate information? And Ken Lay, the chair, ends up dead under circumstances that are really questionable. What are we accomplishing up here? Ignoring these multinational corporations and the effect on the city. And I'm going to tell you about water, Mayor Wheeler, because all across the U.S., Food and Water Watch is winning cases on privatizing water. And you as state treasurer, that's a part of people's costs, everyday living. If they can't pay for their water, their kids are going to get sick, seniors are going to die, and same thing with electricity. They killed people in California when Enron cut the electricity illegally. And Portland was the headquarters. Bonneville is the headquarters of a nuclear plant that should have been closed decades ago. And we have a terrible fight in costs, and we can't go to all the alternatives you want to go to because of the costs. So it continues to be a pattern. And why can't we do better in Portland? Why can't we do better? California is now, from San Diego to our border and all the way over to the border of Wyoming, instead of taking care of our electric costs for people that have to have a life, we've got Warren Buffett, who wants to build a transmission line to make money off of his coal operations in Wyoming and front it with phony green projects. California, from San Diego to Oregon, has lowered rates, has gotten these dirty fuels out of their electricity practically overnight. Just check out the story. Turn, the Utility Reform Network. Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing this in this city? This is supposed to be a city that's progressive. You have not earned that label, and it can be done. And I truly believe if you took the advisement and started getting on it seriously, because the housing without water and electric and considering those costs, those are things that you have an impact on. And you can have an impact on pulling their licenses, and I've requested it on Warren Buffett, because his real estate sign is all over Portland, up to Mount Hood.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for hearing testimony. My name is Megan Dorton. I'm a staff attorney at Legal Aid Services of Oregon. We provide free legal, civil legal services to low-income residents of Portland in areas of law, including housing, family law, public benefits. So I'm here today to say thank you to PHB for the leadership in the work group in which my colleague Christina Dirks participated. We support the work of the work group, and we think that the results are fair and reasonable in addressing landlord concerns while reinforcing the protective intent of the ordinance. And to that end, we'd like to report that in our office, as case handlers, we have experienced, at least anecdotally, a dramatic decrease in the use of no-cause notices in Portland. The few no-cause notices that we do deal with in Portland are generally exempt landlords. That's still very burdensome for our clients, but we have seen a market decrease, and this no causes just simply have the ordinance has changed the legal landscape for low-income tenants. It's changed our intake in terms of our hotline, in terms of our fair housing intake that we do. It has neutralized the most powerful weapons of retaliation and discrimination in our experience so far. So we're looking at numbers, but this has been the anecdotal experience of our case handlers. I was also asked to address the public benefits impact of the ordinance on our low-income clients, and that's an area of the law that we are that factors into basically every case that we practice. And our analysis is that the impact of the ordinance and payments is very minimal on our clients. In terms of the most used benefits, it has little or no impact, such as for most folks receiving medical benefits and food stamps. There's been no impact. And on other benefits, the public benefits, just the ordinance makes moving a possibility for our clients and has such a positive impact on our clients that it greatly outweighs any negative impact. So in terms of public benefits, we don't see a problem.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you
for your work. All right, colleagues, further thoughts, questions, comments?
Well, it seems to me it's really urgent to get the things passed so that at least the tenant, the longer length of time for tenants, which everybody agreed on. So although I am very interested in looking at coming back even next week with additional language on defining what a person is in relation to this item, I think it would be better to pass it and then do another one rather than hold it up.
Mayor, Commissioner Fish. I would like to see us move forward on this. I was very encouraged to hear that consensus was reached on these technical changes, and I'd also appreciate that we've been given a menu of policy questions that we can take up, and we can in due course decide which of those have some kind of urgency. And I do think Matthew makes a good point with the clock running. If any of those policy issues are things we want to be able to discuss and debate at the same time that we're taking up a renewal of the state of emergency and a potentially renewal of this ordinance, I think we should have those cooked for us at that time. So I would urge us to, over the next few weeks, decide what policy questions we want the Bureau to go deeper on beyond the technical work.
So I'm going to raise my primary concern, which was basically reaffirmed by much of the testimony today. If we extend the notice period to 31 days for the tenant and the time frame for the landlord to 31 days, and the tenant doesn't receive relocation assistance until 28 days before their move-out date, and we say that if they overstay their notice period, they have to refund the full amount of the relocation, we are setting them up for failure and potential homelessness. So although I do appreciate the hard work of Housing Bureau staff and members of the committee, there's no way that I can support the amendment as is. I have an amendment that was obviously written before this session, and I am open to some friendly amendments to it. So I'll read the amendment, and then I'll make my suggestion.
Chloe, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
We have before us the annotated, we have the ordinance with the annotated sections with the changes. Where's the 31 days reflected in that document?
Section C, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, C.
I see. Okay.
Yes.
Was there a reason for 31 rather than 30 days? Sorry to be asking a question after we said no. Just.
So we presented a few different options, and one was there was a 1414, 1430, 3014, 3030, and then the group could not reach consensus, and then candidly, the Bureau staff said, okay, we're going to take this off the table, and we're going to move this to the policy questions. And the group asked for one more attempt, and they reached 3131. And from the perspective of some of the property manager representatives, 31 captured the longest month for them, and they do their payment, they do any payments on a monthly basis.
Commissioner, can I ask you a question before we get to the text? If this particular issue was removed from the matter before us, are you in accord with the rest of the proposed changes?
No, I also have a issue with some language in Section D that I would like to see removed and simply send it back to the committee for further consideration and clarification, because I strongly believe, I mean, number one, we're in a housing emergency. We passed an emergency ordinance to deal with the most egregious part of the emergency in the only way we really had left, with the only tool we really had left. The two items that I'm taking issue with don't really constitute an emergency, and they are policy issues, and I think both of them could have unintended consequences, as I mentioned earlier.
But, Matthew, that second issue, indeed, the committee did have consensus on that?
Yeah, this was one that the Housing Bureau had flagged as a technical issue, so it brought forward a recommendation with the mayor's office. And on this one, we flagged this as a technical issue because in Section B and Section C, one of the requirement to receive relocation assistance, the obligation, so they're both landlord obligations and renter obligations in the code, and the obligation of renters to receive the relocation assistance is that they are providing notice that they're going to be moving out rather than accept the rent increase. They economically cannot accept the rent increase, so they're choosing to move out. And so the Bureau had categorized this as a technical fix because the discussion was that in Part D you talk about what the consequence is for a landlord if they don't meet their obligations. And there was a request that same language for tenants be added to the code. And in consultation with the attorney's office, I won't speak for the attorney's office and offer legal advice, but they thought it somewhat redundant with C, that this is already an obligation that a renter has, is if they take the relocation assistance and provide notice that they're moving out on a certain date, they are obligated to move out on that date. And so that is why the Housing Bureau had categorized it as a technical issue.
But this D is about if they then change their mind and decide to stay.
Well, if they change their mind, they can't unilaterally make that decision once they have provided notice to the landlord. They would have to have the landlord agree to allow them to stay for whatever period of time they agree to on mutual consent.
And that puts us into policy territory, I would argue.
Okay.
But I'm trying to understand how the committee, was there debate about this in the committee?
There was not. Certain technical members were in agreement with this, and certain technical members were not. And for the technical issues, the Bureau made a final recommendation per the amendment. It was only on the policy question around the extension of the 14 days that we specifically and explicitly said we would want the entire body to agree.
Okay, and Commissioner Udelli, what's the concern on D, that if they don't move out, they have to give the relocation assistance back?
Well, you're coming up with a scenario where someone simply changes their mind, stays in their unit, and thinks they can keep their relo money, which I sincerely doubt that will happen. And the recourse the landlord has is the same recourse as the tenant would have if the landlord refused to pay it, which is to go to court. I'm imagining a scenario, especially now that we've set up the tenants to have only 28 days to receive their relocation funds and secure a new dwelling, where the tenant hasn't had an adequate amount of time to secure a new home. The tenant experiences a health crisis, or a family member has a health crisis, a situation where maybe they forget to move their last load of boxes and the landlord can come back and claim, you were here an extra day, and they can, because it's that vague, you were here an extra day, you have to repay, you have to refund the relo. So I think, there's two issues. Coupled with the time frame, it's highly problematic. And the issue of how vague it is, I think, sets people up who may experience some extraordinary circumstance or accidental oversight to owe their full amount of relocation, when in fact they have been involuntarily displaced and something arises in their life. You know, maybe it, I'm very uncomfortable with it.
Mayor, can I jump in for a second? I'm mindful that we've set up a process and we have recommendations, and I would normally give great deference to the work of a committee on something like this, shepherded by the Housing Bureau. But I just want to make sure we're clear about our options today. And put aside the fact that this is an emergency ordinance. If we don't have consensus as a council, we can take the emergency clause off, and I presume this will go to a second reading, and we do that. But it seems, I just want to make sure I understand, and Matthew, correct me if I'm wrong, we can vote to accept these changes today. We can amend this and seek to change them. We can ask for more time to study any particular clause that we don't understand, or we could ask that it go back to the committee and ask you to reconvene the committee to make some recommendation. Are those the four options before us?
I mean, I suppose you could just ignore it and do nothing as well.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. And is the if it's a policy question, is it appropriate to go back to this committee, or is it something that we should grapple with? At this point, the committee has discharged something to us. What might happen if this goes back to the committee?
It's hard to say. If the request from council was specifically to take this provision in section D, subsection D, and reach a committee consensus, I'm not saying that's not possible. It definitely will be a challenge, and it would probably be a much more nuanced and complicated kind of structure of code. The exercise was a delicate exercise because there are people who support the policy in general and people who don't, and the Bureau would certainly work with the group to reach a consensus. And if not, then the Bureau would consult with the mayor as housing commissioner on what a recommendation would be in the absence of consensus.
So there's another option. I'll just throw it, Mayor. I'm just pitching, and you can tell me to shut up when you want. If Commissioner Udaly feels very strongly about two items, then as a practical matter, this is not going to pass as an emergency.
Well, to be clear, I have an amendment to offer that I haven't been allowed to read yet.
Okay.
So. Shall I do that?
Please.
Yes.
Okay. Under Section C, remove code changes that change the time frames from 14 days to 31, and under Section D, remove added language that says if a tenant, after receiving relocation assistance from the landlord, does not move out of the dwelling unit in accordance with a tenant notice, the tenant shall repay the relocation assistance to the landlord within a reasonable time frame. Both of the removed items will be sent back to the Technical Advisory Committee for further consideration with council concerns in mind, and return within 3 months or less, totally open to that discussion, with suggestions that address those concerns. And here is the rationale.
Let me just second it for the sake of putting some table.
Thank you.
So Commissioner Daly moves, Commissioner Fritz seconds.
Can I offer a friendly amendment?
Well, I interrupted her, but I just wanted to make sure we had it on the table. Commissioner Daly is going to give her a rationale.
I'll support it with a friendly amendment.
Well, could I hear the rationale first, please?
Commissioner Daly first, then Commissioner Fish can offer an amendment.
So, first, both of these sections have suggested changes are policy in nature or verge on it and fall outside the scope of the Technical Advisory Committee. With that in mind, I think it's imperative that the Council use a critical eye to the ultimate impacts of those changes, which I'm arguing are unknown and potentially unintended and very damaging to some. Ultimate impacts those changes would make to the intent of the ordinance. The original intent of the ordinance was to create an opportunity for tenants to avoid homelessness and other potential harms that an unexpected displacement causes. As such, prescribing that the tenants receive that relocation money in a time frame that allows them the flexibility to find another home is paramount. While we agree that tenants could use longer than 14 days by which to decide if they can absorb a rent increase, giving the landlords additional time as suggested creates a situation where a tenant might not receive relocation until they are 62 days into a 90-day notice period. With a no-cause eviction notice, a tenant receives the money in 45 days, exactly in the middle of the 90-day notice period. That seems fair for both parties, and we feel that should be our goal with a rent increase notice as well. Additionally, adding a damages clause against tenants that is not clear creates more opportunities for conflict and disagreement between parties. If the goal of this clause is to address the lack of a clear 30-day notice requirement on the part of the tenants, then it seems to me that concise language about tenant move-out expectations be written into Section C. However, if the goal is to create some accountability in the chance a tenant accepts relo and then refuses to move, again, highly improbable, the language should be more clear so that there is less room for personal interpretation of expectations that could land both parties in court and potentially put a tenant in further unexpected debt with a judgment on their record. I'm asking that the Technical Advisory Committee take these concerns in mind and craft policy suggestions on these two issues that alleviate the potential for additional unintended consequences. My specific direction to the committee is to A, decide what is the fairest time frame for a tenant to receive a relocation check, and B, craft language that gives tenants and landlords clear directions about when a tenant is expected to move once a relocation check is requested and or accepted. And as far as friendly amendments, like I said, we could ask the committee to come back in 1 month rather than 3 months if there's a sense of urgency around this. I want to recognize the concerns expressed by some of the people that gave testimony today that the increasing the tenant notification period from 14 days is important. So I would accept a friendly amendment to separate those two notice periods, accept the increase on the tenant side, and send the increase on the landlord side back to the committee for reconsideration.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner Daly, for your amendments. And I will support your amendment if this returns to council within 30 days with or without a recommendation of the committee.
That's acceptable to me. How do I accept a friendly amendment? I don't know if I've...
Thumbs up?
Jazz hands?
Commissioner Fritz.
And my logic on this, quite frankly, is I appreciate the amendments and your passion on this issue, and I think if you have a concern, I would like to better understand your concern. And frankly, I don't feel like right now I have enough information one way or another. We have set up a process at the committee, which we have a group of stakeholders that we've asked to help us on this. And the practical effect, if we don't accept your amendment, is the emergency clause would be lifted and this wouldn't be effective for 30 days anyway. So I would err on the side of giving the committee a chance to revisit this and then come back with a recommendation within 30 days.
Commissioner Fritz.
I'd like to hear the Housing Commissioner's opinion, please.
I was afraid you were going to ask me that. As the author of the process that was created at the recommendation of the City Council, my initial reaction while I'm hearing Commissioner Udaly's concern, and I think she's done a good job of laying out the logic behind that concern, for us to send half of the proposal back to the stakeholders who already did their work, who already had this discussion, who already had, from what I understand, some pretty difficult but civil conversations and disagreements. If we move forward on the tenant piece and put the landlord piece back, I think it's going to be seen as an unbalanced decision on the part of the City Council, and those on the committee who represent the landlords will probably feel that their input has been disrespected. That is honestly my concern.
Thank you. And I didn't know you were going to say that, but that actually reflects my concern too. And so I'm not willing on an emergency basis to vote for the amendments. I do feel that we should get the increased length of time for the tenants as soon as possible. That's one thing that almost everybody was agreed on. But I think picking and choosing between what to do, and especially putting it out even 30 days, it's end of May already. October will be here before we know it. I think that this is a pilot policy. It's not going to be perfect, and we should try the next iteration of it.
Could I suggest another strategy? And I may be completely outgunned here on the amendment. If that's the case, obviously I'm fine with it. As I mentioned earlier, this is all code. And even if we move forward today, there is still the opportunity for the conversation with whoever we want to have the conversation with to refine or change anything that is in code. I was not there for those meetings, so I can't, I'm just hearing what Matthew is telling us in terms of, he's politely saying they've done their homework, they've had their debate, and they're probably not going to go much further with it. So maybe it's a different process separate from this. I don't know.
Do we want to consider using the Portland Housing Advisory Committee in any capacity on this?
I think that's an option. I actually just wanted to comment on the amendment to Commissioner Fish's question, though. Looking at the code changes, so looking at Exhibit A, I am confident that the changes in subsection C with the extension to 31 days, I'm confident that that body will not reach consensus on anything but an equal extension of days. So while I'm not, because your question was about the Section D about repayment of the relocation assistance, we didn't spend as much time on that, and the Housing Bureau made the final recommendation in consultation with the mayor's office. And so that, there could be a deeper conversation. But with respect to C and the extension of days, I am nearly 100% confident that if we took that back, there would not be a unanimous decision that didn't have an equal extension of days. And so at the end of the day, that policy question would still rest on the Bureau, the Housing Commissioner, and City Council.
That's one of the reasons why I suggested that it come back to Council with or without a recommendation of a committee, because at least we'd have the benefit of a recommendation from the Housing Bureau.
So again, what I heard from everybody was we needed more time for the tenants to make their decision. I do want, so if we pass this today, that happens. If we put, we can pass it and come back next week, which I heard from Lisa Grant that we could come back with a tighter definition of what a person is in relation to this code, which I would suggest we do.
Here's the problem. We can't pass it today over Commissioner Udaly's objection. The only thing we can do today is lift the emergency clause. So if a majority of the council wants to pass this, the only action left is to remove the emergency clause and have this carried to a second reading there.
And then the tenant extension wouldn't go into effect for 35 days, right?
That's why I, as my friendly amendment, suggested a recommendation come back in 30 days, because under that scenario, it's not going to kick in anyway. And whether it's a recommendation of the committee or the Housing Bureau, I would welcome another bite at the apple.
And Commissioner Udaly has accepted Commissioner Fish's friendly amendment, is my understanding. So why don't we focus narrowly on that for the time being? So we'll just call that Commissioner Udaly's amendment, so we don't have to vote on the amendment to the amendment.
And that's both C and D. And okay. Doing what with the 14 versus 31?
She's the sponsor of that.
Will you repeat your friendly amendment so I can jot it down here, Commissioner Fritsch?
Recognizing that you control the clock here in terms of procedure, because it takes one person to prevent an emergency ordinance from being adopted. And since it would otherwise not be effective for over 30 days, what I have simply suggested is that on the items that you have objected to, that we pull those out and within 30 days bring them back to council with or without a recommendation from the Housing Bureau.
But that was pulling out the extension of 31 days to the tenants as well as to the
Well, that's a refinement. That I would be, Commissioner Fritz, I'd like your guidance on that.
Well, I'm just trying to understand what it is we're going to be voting
on. My original amendment would just simply remove that language from Section C. I had then suggested that I would happily accept a friendly amendment, separating the two, putting the extended time period in place for the tenant so we can revisit the landlord. I just want to point out here that the compelling reason to extend the time period for the tenant is because 14 days is not long enough to make a major life decision as to whether or not, A, you can absorb a rent increase of over 10%, and B, you can find a new rental in the 90 days that you will have. The compelling reason that we've heard on the landlord side is we don't want to have to cut an extra check. So when we talk about equity, I think that it is widely acknowledged that fair does not always mean equal. And I don't think it's reasonable to say if we're going to give 31 days to the tenant, we have to give 31 days to the landlord because that's equal and that's fair. It's not fair. The landlord has a choice. Their choice is to no cause evict a tenant or raise a rent or raise the rent over 10%. That's what triggers RELO. If they don't want to do that, then they shouldn't do either of those things. Once they do one of those things and they risk involuntarily displacing a tenant, adding to our housing crisis and burdening or triggering that RELO, they will know we have 45 days to write this check. Well, if they write checks once every 30 days, then that 30-day time period is going to happen within 45 days, and they can write the check, and if the tenant doesn't want RELO, they can rip it up. So I'm sorry if we can't move forward on this, but the argument is just not compelling, and I just cannot accept only giving a tenant 28 days within which to secure housing at the end of their 90-day period. And I want to point out, I'm the only person up here, despite the fact of Commissioner Fish being a renter, who truly understands, based on lived experience, what this potentially means to a renter. So I am asking you to consider that.
I would like to say,
is your amendment referring both questions back to the committee?
C and D, yes.
Yeah, C and D.
But what she's now saying in the amended version is that it wouldn't refer the tenants and landlords being equal length of time back to the committee.
I just suggested that as a potential friendly amendment, that if we see a compelling reason to extend the time period for the tenant, which I think there is, that we could leave that in place, but we send the second piece, which is extending the time period for the landlord, back to the committee. And I want to point out, in the event of a no-cause eviction, the landlord has to write a check at 45 days, so it would provide consistency. Where it would be hard to argue that that creates an extraordinary burden for the landlord.
So I'd like to say a couple of things. First of all, you don't know my history, so you don't know how much experience I've had with these kinds of issues, and I'd be happy to have a chat with you about that sometime.
All right.
Secondly, that...
Let's say we've got.
It's my turn.
Okay.
We've got a committee which we've put together this ordinance asked that committee to keep working on things for us. Mm-hmm. So we've heard from staff that that was an item, getting to the equal 31 to 31 was something that was the only thing that the committee could come to agreement on. So although I'm personally, I mean, very concerned about your 28 days, of course, if it's such a big rent increase that the tenant knows immediately that they're not going to be able to make it in any way, shape, or form, then they're going to say the next, right when they handed the notice, mm-hmm. clock starts now. But to expect the committee to go back to work after the council has, and to send them back with this thing, which isn't what they were suggesting, as I said before, I think it's important to get that extra time for the tenants. And that's what we could do.
So let's go back to what Commissioner Fish is. Could you flesh that out one more time? And I hate to be dense, but
you're not dense, Mayor.
I want to hear that again.
Let me just say, I've been on the council.
Maybe there's a resolution here.
Mayor, I've been on the council now for 8 or 9 years, and we've had more of these kinds of discussions in your first 3 or 4 months than I can remember over many years. And I say that as a point of compliment. We deliberate in public, and we are all struggling to figure out the answer here, and I appreciate the fact we're doing our deliberations in public. Doesn't mean we're going to get it right from anyone's point of view, but this has been a hallmark, in my opinion, the first few months under this mayor, and I hope it continues because I think it's important. So here's my thinking. This is an emergency ordinance. I learned this from Randy Leonard a long time ago. When you have an emergency ordinance and someone objects, it means we can't pass it. So our only option is to take the emergency off, have it have a second reading, and then it's not effective for at least 30 days. So recognizing that because she has a principled objection to this language, that it would otherwise be delayed 30-something days.
37.
My recommendation is that we pull out C and D, send it to the Housing Bureau and ask them to come back with a recommendation in 30 days with or without consensus from the committee, and we adopt the rest as in the ordinance. We adopt all the other provisions today in this emergency ordinance. And as a practical matter, the effect of that is no different than voting up or down other amendments, going to a second reading and waiting 37 days because an objector controls the clock. And the only question left for us to debate is whether we make one change in C or keep it as is until we get a recommendation. And that's my approach.
Does that work with you, Commissioner Udaly?
Yes.
That works, okay.
And I would, well, and Mayor, Commissioner Fritz has, I think, a view about C. Dan May, if you can get consensus on whether we make one change to C or keep it as is, I think we then have consensus as a council to move forward.
I just think that the rest of the changes without C and D are, I'm wondering whether it's worth doing them. I mean, those two are the most important things that the committee sent to us.
I don't agree with that
so
at all.
All we would have then is B, right?
Well, we're not always going to agree on everything all the time. And certainly my preference would be to go forward with the recommendations as put forth by the council. But as Commissioner Fish correctly points out, that ain't going to happen today. So now we're down to the practical reality. We either remove the emergency clause and wait 37 days, or we do what Commissioner Fish has suggested, which is throw them back in the pool for one more shot and see if we can get closer to a consensus. My personal view, and I'm just going to be honest, is that we're not going to.
So, Mayor.
But as Commissioner Fish points out, it doesn't matter.
Academic. We're not going
to persuade. Academic.
So
exactly.
Perhaps you could ask Commissioner Saltzman what his view is, and we decide whether we have a consensus to move forward.
I think he was twitching over here. I think he was ready to do that. Commissioner Saltzman.
Yeah, I think that I support giving it back to the Housing Bureau for 30 days, given the situation, and seeing whether the committee can come up with another recommendation on that. But I'll be prepared to vote one way or the other in 30 days on the question. I threw out perhaps if we know the committee is truly deadlocked, maybe we ask the Portland Housing Advisory Commission to weigh in on it. And I don't think there's anything that prevents the Housing Bureau from doing that in the intervening 30 days. So I hope they would, do that as well.
Commissioner Fritz?
I don't support moving forward with the proposed way out. I think it's not helpful, especially on something that's a short-term thing anyway, to send it back to the committee when they've already hashed it out. We heard it was very difficult. I just don't see how that helps.
There are several technical amendments in here that are needed to clarify the ordinance that are still intact. If you agreed to these corrections with the language in C and D, which I want to point out, I'm not removing all of C and D. It's two specific items. There's no reason, I don't see a reason to object to the rest of the amendments.
Okay, so the one in B is the one about the one property owner. So we've already discovered we need to change that one. So we can pass it today, but